Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Must See Matches, the essentials of pro wrestling as nominated by you. I am Kieran Lefort, and joining me as ever, the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckley. Mark, how are you doing this week?
I'm good, thanks. Full of ramen and garlic right now.
Yes, I saw your tweet. I'm tempted to get one of those myself. This is from the place Modge recommended a few weeks ago, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had got something from them about a year or so ago and I decided to do it again.
Well, rewind to the All Japan six-man tag episode if you want to hear 5 minutes of chat about ramen restaurants in Cardiff. We won't go over it again today. Joining us this week, strutting up to her microphone in a crown and cape, Sarah Flan is back. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm really good. I wish I had a crown. I should have gotten one for this recording. But really good. How's it November? Sorry, I'm time stamping this podcast even more.
Fun.
But it's crazy.
Yeah.
November time.
It's gone too fast, and it's horrible outside. And the storm shares my name phonetically, at least, and I don't like it.
No, not at all. I want to pretend that it is summer, or at least January. To be honest,
January 4th, 2015.
Possibly.
Yes.
Possibly.
Well, that's where we're going to go. That's where we're setting the must-see time machine this week. Shinsuke Nakamura versus Kota Ibushi from Wrestle Kingdom 9, January 4th, 2015, in the Tokyo Dome, obviously. Nakamura is defending his Intercontinental title here. Hey, remember when that was a title and it was really good and exciting?
I saw that belt in the New Japan shop when I was on holiday. And let's put it this way, there's a huge great crack in the damn thing where part of the faceplate has come away from the rest of it. You remember how that was treated during Naito's runs, where he was using it like a tennis ball.
Yeah, that must have been the specific one that Naito was abusing on a nightly basis.
Sorry, Sarah, I know you like Naito, but he's not good with physical objects.
Neither am I, so maybe that's why I like him so much.
I can't remember who said it, but I once heard the best description of Tetsuya Naito's character, which is, he is your friend who says he gives no fucks, but secretly gives all of the fucks.
Oh, yeah. That is very accurate.
Yeah. we've gone off on a tangent already, but at least it's a New Japan tangent. Sarah, why are you here? Why is this match so good? Why is it on your must-see list?
I think it's because And I think it's everyone for this match. I think everyone's kind of the same. It is kind of the match of the quintessential New Japan is the best promotion in the world. Mm. You know, you're not a wrestling fan if you're not watching New Japan. And I really felt at the time that for this match. I think it was during an era. And to be honest, it was for me, I was watching wrestling. I wouldn't say I watched it every day. Night in, night out. I wasn't up on all the wrestling. I wasn't up on everything. I was in college, busy, but wrestling was still a constant. But this match in New Japan was really the ones I think set the alarm bells off of like, I need to get watching this more on a regular basis if this is kind of the quality that they're putting out. I mean, obviously at the time, Okada and Tanahashi, of course everyone watched that because it's Tanahashi and everyone loves Tanahashi and Okada. But it's then kind of, it wasn't just a one match show anymore.
Mm.
And I think double main event as well.
Yeah, I'm looking down the star ratings on this match. You've got a 4-star, 2, 2, 2, 3 3/4, a 4.5, a 4.25, a 5, and a 4 3/4. Like, we talk about the New Japan Golden Period where every show became must watch. And I think this comes. Like smack in the middle of it, doesn't it? Like you'd say it probably starts with like the 2012 G1 and ends with like maybe Wrestle Kingdom in 2018, perhaps, or maybe even G1 in 2018. Mm. I always think of it as being like that 5-year period, and this is like bang in the middle of it. Yeah. This was also, they were putting their best foot forward because this show was also on US pay-per-view. Although that was a bit of a mess. So that was one that Jeff Jarrett was trying to promote. And Kevin Sullivan, not that one, the video one, not the spooky wrestling one, was making all kinds of promo videos and stuff to try to sell this to the US market. They had, for better or worse, Jim Ross and Matt Stryker on English commentary to try and sell this even further to get Westerners to buy it. And to some extent, it worked. I mean, we got English language commentary on New Japan going forward, didn't we? to the point where, you know, it actually became good for a while. And so would you have been watching this at the time? Like, would, I mean, you kind of said, I guess, like, not wrestling's not an everyday thing, but drop everything, there's a big New Japan show on.
Yeah, I think that was definitely, if I was to define my fandom at the time outside of, I suppose, American promotions, it was definitely tune in for the big shows, let people tell me what to watch, and I'll catch up. But it was definitely not, I think, like you said, probably after this, it was, let's get up at 6 a.m. and tune in.
Yeah.
But gosh, yeah, I think as well, Ibushi's always been one of my favorite wrestlers.
Sure.
You know, obviously I got into him with his Omega stuff in DDT, and that kind of carried over in New Japan. I suppose really his junior run the year before, I would have watched a lot more of that. And then obviously he was in the G1 and then it got cut short. But I think then from then on, Ibushi was like one of my ones to watch constantly.
Mm. Mark, I would presume you would be one of the up at 6 o'clock people at this time. I certainly was.
Yeah, it was that kind of, because most of these were like during work day. So it'd be like, how much can I watch in the morning before I need to get in my car? Kind of bits. And this was, as you said, this was back in the day when New Japan were not doing one match pay-per-views, when like the card was loaded. So it's like, well, okay, I can get some really good matches in, then I'll drive, then I'll have to make damn sure that I don't go on social media for the next 8 hours. So for me, I was probably following New Japan regularly from 2011, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this was peak Mark really watches this religiously, and that I'd actually been to Japan for the G1 final the year before.
I would go in 2015 and do exactly the same thing.
I went in the dud year, and I went in 2019 after the glory period, but I still went.
Yeah,
I still got to go.
All G1 vets. Mark, this is the last time we're seeing each of these guys, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the last for Ibushi and the last for Nakamura. And the interesting thing with Ibushi is that we, on the podcast, we've never really covered any of his peak junior runs. Like, we've not covered his DDT. This is actually the closest we get to junior Kota Ibushi. And even here, you can see that he's evolving into a heavyweight.
Yeah.
But this is the time before he had the Kamigoye, for example. He wouldn't have that until 2017. So the interesting thing, Ibushi has more than twice as many nominations as Nakamura. So Nakamura only had 9 nominations. Mm. Ibushi has 23.
Wow.
And I think it kind of, I can get it for Nakamura because I think we've said this before, a lot of these New Japan shows, it's very hard, like, okay, which Tanahashi versus Okada, which Ibushi versus X, which Ishii versus X?
Mm.
With very few exceptions, you know, they all kind of blend into one, especially because of the G1 format of over a 5-year period, these guys will wrestle each other 3 times in the G1 on average. Yeah. And I can kind of get why Ibushi got more nominations, because he was in a lot more different promotions. It's like he had DDT stuff, he had Noah stuff nominated.
Mm.
He had New Japan when he was a junior, he had New Japan when he was a heavyweight. So I get that. And also Nakamura kind of had this reputation that you could argue he's justified in WWF as being a, when it matters, I'll turn it on. When it doesn't, I'll just cruise.
Mm. I really liked the hype video for this. Musically, it's not for me at all. It's all wobby wobby dubstep. But you would never see a major American promotion do anything like this stylistically. Mm. Like, it felt very fresh. It made both guys look very cool. Much like the last one we discussed, which was for Okada versus Tanahashi, this lays out the story simply enough, even if you don't speak any Japanese. Nakamura is the champion. He's clearly fed up with not having any worthy competition. Mm. And then we go to Power Struggle on November the 8th, and he's in the ring on the mic.
I love this.
After vanquishing his latest challenger, which would have been Katsuyori Shibata. And he is mid-sentence when Ibushi sprints into the ring, rushes up from behind, and German suplexes him.
It's just such a great challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And then he throws his metaphorical hat into the equally metaphorical ring. You have to say metaphorical, otherwise people think he was actually wearing a hat. We get clips of Ibushi doing wacky shit in DDT, but then also showing that he can get it done in the more traditional New Japan ring. So, as you said, you've seen that he's been a junior tag champion, a junior singles champion. You've seen that he's won tournaments in New Japan. We get shown that they fought before in the G1. We get to hear what each guy thinks of the other, which is very... like I said, even if you don't speak the language, it's made very obvious by the choices of clips and how they're speaking. Yeah. Ibushi mocks Nakamura's poses. He also uses a naughty word, which gets bleeped out, I noticed. Most of all, they both look very cool and very skillful. So it's even like, even if you've never seen these two before and you don't understand what's being said, they look cool and they look like they know what they're doing and it looks like their fight is going to be fun. Last week, we talked about Noah's slow motion Rey Mysterio launcher in their stage.
Yeah.
New Japan paid for the full power real deal as the answer to who's that jumping out the sky is Kota Ibushi this time around.
Oh, he got some height on that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And then as soon as Subconscious hit, I popped out of my seat because I remember that this was the Nakamura King entrance.
Yeah.
And it is so simple. Like, holy shit, what a megastar. It's a crown, a cape, a jacket, and he just walks down the ramp. He does all his little Michael Jackson bits here and there. And, you know, he raises his hand like he's Emi Sakura waving to the crowd. But, like, it's the definition of owning the room. And that is a big room to own. And I like the Japanese commentator even says, Ichiban Yabai Pro Wrestler, which means the number one Oh My God wrestler.
Yeah.
Which is the perfect description for Nakamura at this time, I think.
It's really sad because in my notes, I just have like literally a solid, like, remember when Nakamura was good?
Yep.
Yeah.
And like I feel like I actually just saw some clips of Nakamura recently. Like, I'll be honest, I haven't watched a Nakamura match, I'd say, in about 5 years, six years. Same. I just no interest, and just clips I've seen, he's like a caricature of this Nakamura, that he's still trying to kind of do the same kind of moves in terms of how he walks the ring, and he's being a bit of a dick and all that sort of stuff, but for here it just seemed so natural and it wasn't forced, and that's what made it cool, whereas now it's just like, oh, it's a parody.
Yeah.
But it just, there's no one, I think, at this time matched the charisma of Nakamura.
I've got friends that were not New Japan fans that would, basically, he was the guy that jumped out and they said, he's cool. I want to watch more from him. The two bits that I want to quickly highlight from this entrance, one, I don't remember this at the time, but it's like they have this really cool New Japan roster as playing cards bit on the backstage on the video screens.
Yeah.
And I really like that. And the other thing is, I know it's not quite, but the crown just gives me big Starscream in the Transformers movie vibes.
Coronation Starscream? This is bad comedy. I know that movie word for word. That's so sad. Or very cool if you like Transformers. Yeah, around this time, Nakamura is probably my favorite active wrestler. I went to the G1 final mostly because I thought he was going to win it, having no idea that he had pretty much already signed his WWE deal and was on his way out. Like, I was the only, probably the only person in Sumo Hall pulling for Nakamura against Tanahashi. So the bell unfortunately goes clunk, like someone trying to ring a cowbell wrapped in a duvet underwater. I don't know what this was. And they start off by playing off their martial arts experience. Like, they're dancing around each other. They're testing each other's defenses with kick and palm strike attempts until Nakamura, I wrote, goes in for a wrestle, but gets instantly guillotined and has to push Ibushi back into the ropes to escape. And he then tries to do his, it's probably got a name, his head on the chest, dangly arms taunt. But Kota is having none of that and just slaps his head away. And this sparks off a brief flurry of action where neither man can really land anything. Nakamura, in a big American heel way, theatrically offers a hand to shake. And innocent, simple boy Ibushi takes it and gets clobbered. He narrowly avoids a bomaye, batters Nakamura down in a corner, mocks him with the taunt that's become known as good vibrations, and then beckons him out with more Shinsuke mannerisms. Nakamura is not going to stand for this. We've talked about this a lot, like people coming into other people's backyards and trying their shit. Like we talked about it last week with the chop exchange between Kensuke Sasaki and Kenta Kobashi. This kind of thing seems to show up a lot on our show.
Well, I mean, one, it's because that's a good way of making things more personal and adding a bit more heat and a bit more fire. And one of the things I love about this match is how that sense of annoyance and getting under each other's skin basically makes each guy up their level of aggression and dickishness. Mm. So it's really good like that. I watched their only other match, their 2013 G1 match, before I did my first watch of this. And there's a few similarities, and one of them is, again, that match has that stand-up kickboxing-style start. But what's interesting is, in this one, Ibushi is more comfortable, whereas Nakamura had the control of it in the 2013 one.
So
there's multiple times where there's some really big callbacks, but there's other bits where you can just see that the kind of the dynamic between the two has shifted. Mm. And that was when Ibushi was a junior challenging Nakamura. And now he really, because Ibushi's now done with the junior division, he had his big junior run in 2014. He's now focusing on being heavyweight. That's his focus. And it feels like they are closer in terms of size and striking.
So Ibushi gets good vibrations reversed on him and then smashed with the knee strike across the top rope. And there's some more knee-based offense on the floor. There's a lot of knees in this match. A lot of knees.
This is Shinsuke Nakamura in the mid-2010s. It's knees. His knees all the way down.
You ever seen the film Ong Bak? It's a Thai martial arts movie that's based around Muay Thai, and like almost every move in it is like a flying knee or a spinning knee. It's like watching that, but in the Tokyo Dome. Back inside, Shinsuke just grinds Ibushi down, and I like the chin lock that got slowly more and more complex. It wasn't an octopus hole, but Nakamura looked like an octopus as he keeps adding more and more limbs to tie up Ibushi. Back on their feet, Ibushi lays in a hard forearm, and Nakamura just looks at him and calmly brushes a speck off his chest. He does the same for a second one before a third one is enough, and he just lights into him with a barrage of his own. He then pulls Ibushi back into the middle of the ring, bends him over, and I hope this doesn't get clipped and sent around the internet. The only way I can describe it is he spanks Ibushi's face. Ibushi's bent over, being held by the hair, and Nakamura just lays in 8 slaps across his face. Like, it looks so humiliating. Ibushi comes back with one of his own, misses a second, and gets hit with the backstabber. And to me, this is the moment, this is the sequence where it looked like any respect for each other they had previously had was gone. Ibushi flips out of the reverse power slam, hits a lovely Frankensteiner that sends Nakamura to the floor, and then wipes him out with a perfect triangle moonsault. A swan dive drop kick on the way back in, followed by a strike rush, a harsh middle kick, and a standing shooting star press gets Kota a 2 count. There are a couple of famous photos of Bruce Lee. I think one of them is from Game of Death and one of them is from The Big Boss. And in them, he's doing a flying kick. That is what Nakamura hits Ibushi with here to counter a top rope move. I called it the full Bruce Lee right in the collarbone.
Yeah.
It's not so good on the live shot. The replay is tremendous. Like, Nakamura's silhouette looks incredible.
And you can see Ibushi's collarbone shifts back by about half an inch.
Yeah. Ibushi's collarbone briefly becomes a third shoulder blade.
I think that's kind of the great thing about this match, that like you said, all the respect's gone between them. But nearly then, when Ibushi gets into his flow, he nearly reverts to not Ibushi of old, but he's breaking out. He's breaking out those moonsaults. He's breaking out the Steiners. He's not going for the pounding and striking that kind of solidified the earlier part of the match. He kind of gets into his flow. And it's only then when Nakamura hits him so brutally with those strikes that it nearly shakes him out of him to be like, oh, I can't do this. This isn't the way to beat Nakamura. Yeah. I need to play him at his own game and try and one-up him. And I think it's kind of it's what makes this match kind of beautiful, that it's always like, no, Ibushi, you're moving up now. You can't just break out the moves that won you all your juniors matches. You have to actually now elevate. And I think it's really at this point where you can kind of see him, okay, I need to maybe shift my approach here.
Yeah, the stuff that used to work isn't going to work here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I think, again, the whole thing with this match is it shifts, and it's all these shifts and all these changes. Yes, they're doing the stuff you know them for. They're doing the stuff that you know they'll do. But there's a sense of constant change of pace and change of aggression and change of determination. And that's one of the real strengths of this. Because the thing for me on the execution, it comes in a few moves' time, is this is also the period where Nakamura is toning certain things down. Because if you compare, Nakamura had one of my favorite straight punches in all of wrestling. His straight punch for years, I absolutely loved. This is the period where he's not doing it like that. He's kind of doing it more as a hook or doing it as a forearm. Like his landslide finisher, he changes how he does that from, if you watch a landslide from, say, his 2008 run to even this period and his WWF run, it's a different move almost. So you can see that he's changing, but maybe for the worse, but you can see Ibushi changing for the better.
Ibushi ducks a high kick, but gets a spinning heel to the face, a gourd buster, and some big knees in the side of the head. He manages to avoid another bomaye and then takes Nakamura off the top with a lovely springboard rana. The play-by-play guy is yelling, kawaii, 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 which means scary, scary, scary.
This is our second match in the row with a top rope rana, and let's say this one is more graceful than the last one.
However, given what a lumpy little fridge he is, Kensuke Sasaki's was very nice.
Yeah, he has a surprisingly good top rope rana.
It's on his CV. Surprisingly good top rope rana. Doesn't use often. Again, we get another awesome replay of this. Kota channels his mate Kenny with a snapdragon suplex, followed by a perfect standing tornado moonsault. Like, it looks like I know he doesn't, but it looks like he rotates sideways twice before he lands on Nakamura. It's just so crisp and so fast.
Yeah, people, modern fans probably don't realize Ibushi probably was like top five high flyer in the world for a long time.
For years.
Yeah.
Nakamura denies him the last ride powerbomb. And I always think it's funny that the two people that do the last ride are gigantic Mark Calloway and much, much smaller Kota Ibushi. Yeah, so Nakamura, he's clinging onto the leg to not have that happen, but he gets sunset flipped and then runs into what I called a snap of a roundhouse kick that just drops him.
Honestly, this roundhouse, if Ibushi had a thumbtack on the end of his boot, he would have pierced Nakamura's ear.
Yes.
It was just right in the ear.
Yeah. He gets the last ride off, but he's lazy with the cover and Nakamura's out at two. Nakamura avoids the Phoenix Splash and flattens his challenger with a bombaye to the back of the head.
And this was when the Phoenix Splash was Ibushi's big finisher. It was the move that won him almost all of his junior title run from the previous year.
Yeah. This is the point where Nakamura's had enough of this little shit. And gives him the full Bishop Brennan, kicks him directly in the arse to get him over the bottom rope, and then just starts roughly stomping his head in. We talked in our little bonus episode about the Takeo Nomura versus Fuminori Abe match, about some of the stomps in that. And we talked in the Noah six-man episode about some of the horrible stomps in that. The stomps to the head in this match rival anything in either of those matches. It's so violent.
Oh, they are nasty.
It was so nasty. And it was honest. It was like he actually was just so pissed off because it was like no rhyme or reason to them. And you can just see it in his face. It was the most aggression I think that Nakamura showed on Matt. As he knows he actually nearly got lucky and he was nearly beaten. And it was only that Ibushi was lazy that he was actually still in this match. And he was like, okay, I need to stay on him. And this is my way in.
Also, I will teach you to be lazy with me, you little bastard.
Yeah.
If you're coming in here with the king, you're going to give your best.
There were moments from both guys where you're thinking, did they actually lose their temper during?
Yes, I was thinking that through both of my watches. Like, you could very well make a case for it, like, starting to break down and then cooler heads prevailing several times. So the ref manages to get Shinsuke off and Ibushi just blankly smiles, stands up, and then turns and starts throwing full force palm strikes to the head, followed by just outright punching Nakamura in the side of the face. Red Shoes gets in between them, and Nak just shoves him into Ibushi and then smacks him with a closed fist of his own. But as you were kind of alluding to, Mark, it is much more pulled than any of Ibushi's were.
Yeah.
Like, you can see when it's not a straight punch. He's got his arm still fully coiled, and he's more going into it with his shoulder than anything else.
Yeah, his arm is literally bent 90 degrees at the elbow, and
it's less of a punch, it's more of a push with his knuckles.
Yeah, whereas even 3 years before this, it would have been a straight to have rivaled anything that Ibushi threw from those palm strikes.
Yeah. Ibushi deflects a second one of these and winds up for his version of the burning lariat, but Nakamura counters into the flying armbar for a big pop.
And what I loved was this was one of the biggest callbacks to their 2013 match, because Ibushi got himself out of trouble with that big burning lariat. That was a move that helped him fight off a Nakamura onslaught. So here you've got the sense that Nakamura knows this is something that Ibushi will rely on when the chips are down, and he has it scouted. And it's also one of his best submission moves as well. So it just worked perfectly for him.
I'm so glad you watched that, because, like, all of this escaped me. I won't have seen that G1 match since it happened. And in fact, I don't think I'd seen this match since it happened. I don't think I'd revisited this at all.
The irony is that G1 match, very quickly, is like, I think that is the highest rated show on Cage Match that isn't a someone has passed away and it's a very nice gesture show.
Okay, interesting.
Because that's...
The word you're looking for, Mark, is tribute.
Tribute. Sorry. Yeah.
But not in the fake Kane sense that we get around this country. Anyway, sorry.
Because that was the one... So you had that as the main event. You had Shibata versus Ishii. Yes, that match.
Right.
Halfway through. And I think that's a show that had like 5 4-star rated matches on.
Yeah.
If you look at the card on that one, it's an absolute doozy. And I mean, this was a damn good card as well. Sorry for the digression.
Sorry, Taz. Kota defends this armbar by stacking Nakamura up on the back of his neck and then, Jesus Christ, just stomping him right in the face.
At one point, Nakamura just has a bloody gash. And I wonder if that was just one of these kicks or stomps and he's just caught him with the edge of his boot.
Yeah, I think so. It's like this big, like, red scuff mark going diagonally across his forehead, isn't it? Yeah. And even after, like, the ref pulls him off, Ibushi is still, like, kicking away at Nakamura on the ground. Ibushi then runs through all of Nakamura's favorites, reverse power slam, taunt in the corner, the yow, and then steams in and hits him with the bombaye. He covers too high though and doesn't hook the leg, so Shinsuke is out at one. Again, it's that you come at the king, you best not miss.
Imagine trying to disrespect him like that. You know, that was one of my favorite parts of the match, just because you knew that Nakamura was not having it. You know, that was nearly like a Hulk up moment that he's like, that's what you're going to do to me, you know, in the Tokyo Dome, semi-main event.
I mean, you get you get those little bits where someone will try to do a Cardiff Rainmaker, or there's a little bit of finisher switcheroo, both guys knowing to hold both triggers, if you know those wrestling games. But in those cases, it's just a case of that's a move that will get me out of trouble. Here, this is Ibushi just mocking Nakamura. And yeah, that's going to get anyone riled up.
And doing it very well. Very often when you see one wrestler do their opponent's move, like, because they're not used to doing it, it won't look very good. Mm. Here, I would argue that Ibushi's Bomae looks better than any of Nakamura's in this match.
Yeah, it does. And the crowd are molding for it too.
Yeah.
And I think that was a great thing about it, and about this match in general, that the crowd were just cheering for the whole time for both, just for the action and having that. Because it could have been that Ibushi did that, and it could have been, they could have been booing Ibushi, going to see that he was going to go for the Bomae, but they didn't. They were really egging him on to really go after Shinsuke. And I think that's just what really made it, because if it was one man over the other that they were cheering for, it would have taken it away. But they were egging them both on to just keep going at it.
And they do keep going at it. Ibushi continues punching and kicking at the back of Nakamura's head until Nakamura is able to get up, hoof him back into the corner, and give him some of his own medicine, including trying to shove the toe of his boot directly into Ibushi's mouth. And in another clip I don't really want cut and sent around the internet, my next note just reads, tongue defending.
there was a bit of... It's kind of not purposeful boot licking, but yeah, it's a little bit boot licking.
It's not that kind of boot licking. They trade strikes and misses in the middle of the ring. They hit simultaneous hard slaps twice, and then Ibushi does that physics-defying thing of a double stomp to a running opponent.
What I love about this strike exchange, and this is one of the strengths of the match, because yes, it's that pet peeve again. The Chuckle Brothers strike exchange does not appear in this match.
Yeah.
These two are great strikers, and together I think they have fantastic striking chemistry, because they both have some MMA / kickboxing background, so they know how to do this stand up where you're both striking at the same time, and it feels completely different to almost every other New Japan match in terms of the way the striking's done, and it makes it feel special.
It's natural striking between two fighters rather than performative striking between two pro wrestlers. Nakamura rolls to the apron, which proves to be a big mistake, as Ibushi brings him back in with what I can only call the murder German.
Yeah.
He springboards up to the top rope, wraps his arms under Shinsuke's armpits, and hauls him back into the ring German suplex style. The commentators, quite rightly, freak the fuck out. And the cameraman, what I like was the shot they used. The camera guy doesn't know where it's going and is wobbling all over the place trying to keep them in the frame.
Yeah, the other thing that's fascinating about this from the camera perspective is, because I had a look at, I was searching for other instances of this move, because it's one that Ibushi didn't do a lot, but it was one, it was like, okay, this is a big match, I'm going to pull it out.
Yeah.
And this was the only time that I can see that they shot it from the side, because all the other ones, they're shooting it from behind with basically the wrestlers coming towards the camera.
Yeah.
And this was probably the least impressive looking, if you look back at the footage. It's more the kind of, oh shit, I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
That really brings it through. Because
I think it's the most dangerous and spontaneous. For my, I think this is the first time I remember seeing it happen.
I think this is the first time he did it.
Yeah. Which explains why nobody knew it was coming, except perhaps Nakamura. And even then, that's a coin toss. Because, you know, it's Kota Ibushi. Ibushi hooks Nakamura for the Phoenix Plex, which after that would have been instant death.
So I thought, well, this is weird that he's bringing out the Phoenix Plex. He actually used it in 2014, which I didn't expect. He used it to beat Ricochet.
Oh, wow.
So that's lovely, the fact that he'd done it previously. So again, that, so the crowd actually reacted to it more, rather than if he just brought it out from, say, his DDT days, which would have been years before.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been some recognition, but there would also have been some, oh Christ, what is he doing now?
Yeah.
Because, again, that it's Kota Ibushi and it could be anything.
I would argue the most dangerous thing in wrestling for a good few years was being Kota Ibushi's best mate, because he just had these ideas for moves and you take it and you best hope that your neck was made of rubber.
That's why DDT bought Yoshihiko.
Yeah. Doesn't he? I think he had in his weird room, which just looked like a wooden box. Didn't he have like proper like sandbagged things so he could practice moves on?
Yeah, he had like a black kind of wrestle dummy. It was like proper person weights who could test it. And I'm pretty sure he broke it once. I'm pretty sure he broke the spine of it.
I haven't seen this Kota Ibushi episode of Cribs that apparently is going around. Nakamura obviously knows that his neck is in serious trouble if he gets hit with this Phoenix Plex, and he desperately headbutts his way out of it, mounting Ibushi with punches until he's told to get off, and then heads up to the second rope. He hits Ibushi in the back of the head with a bombe, but Ibushi just rolls through and comes up smiling. They charge into each other, shins collide, but Nakamura hoists him up for a release landslide, and then I'm not even going to call it a bombe because he doesn't leave his feet. It's a sprinting knee to the side of the face as Ibushi is coming up off the mat and gets the pin. Afterwards, Nakamura goes over to the downed Ibushi and commiserates with him, and then offers him a fist bump that Ibushi accepts, and the respect is back.
Mm.
He does a bit of mic work that, as usual, has the crowd eating out of his hand, and he charismatically struts away, and all I could think was, it is no wonder WWE came for him after this performance.
Yeah. Like,
this is your showreel. This is your tape that you send out to everybody. He looks like everything you could want in a top star in this half an hour.
There was a point on the atrocious English commentary, because I watched it initially in Japanese, but then my New Japan subscription ran out, so I ended up using the English language version that I had a hold of.
I did it the other way around. I watched it with English first and then was like, I need to find it in Japanese for my notes watch.
And there is a point where JR just straight up says how this guy would be a star in any company, and you kind of wonder, did he make a phone call or send a text? The only other thing I'll say about the English commentary is, if you can get the choice of the Japanese commentary, do.
Yeah.
Because, Matt Stryker and JR, where JR is literally getting Stryker to feed him lines.
Yeah.
It's just, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't lie. I didn't even bother, guys. I just watched it in Japanese. I'm not an English commentary hater. I'm happy to watch it, but I just couldn't for this one. I was like, no.
Oh,
no. Can't blame you. And this was the year when they didn't have Yoshihashi in the booth.
Sarah, is this still must-see? Is this still top of the tree?
I think it's still a must-see for everyone to define a time period in New Japan. But I have to say, I wouldn't put it as 5 stars. Okay. And that's not a slight against it. It's a great match. The pacing's brilliant. It's a lot slower than I remember. And I'm saying that as a positive. Like, that's not a negative. It's a positive. Yeah. It's really well paced, really well timed 20 minutes. I think for the time, I think watching it, when I watched it for the first time, it was 5 stars because I think I didn't really know any better. But I think we've had so many great matches since, maybe not from Shinsuke, but from Ibushi. And I think I'm more of a 2016, 2017 New Japan fan. Maybe that's just because that was my peak.
Yeah.
That I do prefer more of the main events from that era than, say, this one.
As I mentioned, my first watch was with the American commentary, and it made me hate the match. It really, really dragged it down. I was like, oh God, I'm so disappointed. Is this what this match is? And then I came back 3 or 4 days later and I watched it with Japanese commentary, and it is excellent stuff. I think you're kind of right, Sarah, in that there is so much stuff we have seen between then and now. We're in an era where you get a match. When I was a kid, you'd be talking about for years every week on free television now. Or on a streaming service, or some indie promotion puts one up on YouTube. And, you know, it's the world has got smaller.
That's it.
In terms of the wrestling we can see since this time. It's so much easier to access.
It's, again, that G1 syndrome where you have so much great matches so close together that you're struggling to tell it apart. So for me, it's kind of, we're at the era now where being a great match is not good enough. Like I said this on the Abe Nomura episode, that I've seen not all of them, but I've seen a lot of like the big Will Ospreay matches and the big Kenny Omega matches and the big New Japan matches. And honestly, they all just feel the same. So the only ones that really stand out are the ones that feel different, which was Nomura versus Abe. And I think you do see that on the list, because I think Tomohiro Ishii is the best example that if everything feels great, but it doesn't stand out, that people don't remember it. Yeah. So Ishii actually had an incredibly low amount of nominated matches because they all felt the same. And I think, is that the same with Nakamura?
It's something I feel really spoiled and churlish to complain about. Oh no, wrestling is too good.
Honestly, sometimes it's why I actually purposely watch old shows and watch all the bad stuff. Mm. So I can really appreciate how good wrestling is.
You can recalibrate yourself.
Yeah. Because that's it. And I think, like, say, like, when I'm watching wrestling at home with other people, we actually do just watch the full shows, because I think sometimes we're so guilty of skipping to the main event, skipping to the ones that everyone talks about.
Yeah. Now everything is easily skippable. Like, you had to make an effort. It took almost as much time to fast forward through a bad match on a VHS tape as it did to just sit and watch the damn thing. So you would just sit and watch it, you know, fucking four doinks versus Bam Bam Bigelow and his cronies. Possibly the worst match that there's ever been. Shout out to Big Papa T and Tom Munro. Anyway, this match, I vacillated on whether it was must-see, and I think I'm coming down on yes. But perhaps not for the reasons either of you might. If somebody said to me, it's Peak Ibushi versus Peak Nakamura, I'd be thinking I'd be getting graceful kicks, aerials, slick wrestling technique. But this breaks down into them angrily disrespecting each other. Mm. With all apologies to Cara Noir, this is like two swans having a fight. And if somebody came to you and went, there's two swans having a fight in the street, you'd go and watch that. That's why this is must see. Mark, how about you? If you've recovered from that analogy.
I've not seen two swans having a fight.
Neither have I, but if somebody knocks on your door and said there's two swans having a fight, you'd go and have a look.
Yeah, the closest I've come to that was watching two tigers having a pissing contest. And my mate being the stick that they were aiming at.
Or glasses versus seagull, as we covered last week.
Oh, God. So I watched this, and I watched the 2013 Ibushi versus Nakamura match, and I'm torn between which of the two I prefer.
Sure.
Which is fascinating, because the thing is, this had the big match feel. It had the big match entrance. It had the big crowds caring about it and getting behind it. It had that lovely sense of escalation. But the 2013 match, every time Nakamura threw a knee, the Osaka crowd yelled "Yow" as loud as they could.
Yeah.
Basically, if you've seen a crowd that's popping for like a big spot they didn't expect, that level reaction on every single time Nakamura did a knee strike. So,
but
what
a position to be in, though, like not being able to choose between two matches between these two participants.
Exactly. That shows that they're both great matches, but it also comes back to this. New Japan guys often making it hard for you to choose which match you want. The fascinating thing was when you said this is peak Nakamura, because for me, this is peak charisma Nakamura. This is not peak worker Nakamura.
Yeah. You're probably right there. Yeah.
But I say this as someone that's
it's also arguably not peak Ibushi, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because you'd argue that Ibushi had a peak around... Well, Ibushi had weird peaks. I'd say 2007 was a peak. I'd say 2012, 2013, 2014, there was a peak. Mm. Then he had his 2018 peak. He's like the Himalayas.
Yes.
I mean, this is a match you can see Ibushi's growth. You can see where Ibushi's come from, and you can see where he's going. I think this is a great match. I think this is the kind of match where... If you want to get someone interested in New Japan, especially that era of New Japan, it's the kind of match that you'd use as an entry point.
Mm.
And it was an entry point at the time. And for a lot of people, this is like one of the first things they saw of New Japan. And I would say this is probably one of the reasons why New Japan built that US audience is matches like this.
Yeah.
I think it's a great match. I kind of don't think it's must see. It's not aged badly, but it's kind of, there's so many other things I prefer from New Japan.
Sure.
Kind of, if I didn't want to do a list that was just New Japan, I'd have to pick and choose. And this is one I probably wouldn't choose. It's great stuff. It's really, really good match. And you're going to have a good time watching it. And as Kieran said, there's things about this that you don't expect on paper that make it better.
Mm.
But I don't think it's must-see. And weirdly, I've actually become a low man on Nakamura. I don't think any of his matches are must-see per se. It's just because I don't think he hits the level that a Tanahashi hits or an Okada hits. He doesn't have that emotional connection that a Tanahashi does. Nakamura is that cool guy. He is a cool wrestler. He's a definition of a cool wrestler. But he just doesn't have that little soul / heart that gets me into the best matches.
It's Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart all over again, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, because Bret Hart puts me to sleep.
Oh.
Right, let's cut him off. As mentioned, this is 5 stars in the Observer, 9.64 it currently sits at on Cage Match. The Wrestling Observer Wrestle Kingdom 9 poll had 373 respondents. All of them gave this show a thumbs up. 369 of them voted for a match of the night. I don't know what the other four were doing. 237 went for this match over Tanahashi versus Okada, which took the rest of the vote. And there is a quote from Dave Meltzer, which is, "The Tanahashi win over Okada would have been a strong match of the year candidate, except it has almost no chance given the Nakamura versus Kota Ibushi match that preceded it." If we are done with Shinsuke Nakamura versus Kota Ibushi, I would like to thank Sarah very much for joining us. The floor is yours to let people know where you can be found if you want to be found and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, great. I suppose I don't really talk much about wrestling on my feeds, but I'm trying to more. I'm trying to get my end of year together and actually complete everything that needs to be watched by end of year. So you can get me at Sarah Flan on Twitter. Not X, it's still Twitter, let's face it. I haven't updated the app on my phone. It's still
Neither
Twitter.
Have I. I keep worrying. I update all of my apps individually, and I keep worrying that one day I'm going to do it on autopilot and accidentally hit update on the Twitter app.
Sadly, no. Mine has been X for a long time.
Oh, boo. No X.
But I have a group chat that is almost nothing but taking the piss out of Elon Musk, so I think that swings and roundabouts.
As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustymatches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations, and so much more. We are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky, and you can come on our Discord, which is bit.ly/mustymatchesdiscord. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter, and Mark is...
at monkey_buckles.
I will quickly plug my secondary show, which is Nothing and Like It, in which myself, Eddie Sideburns, and Andy Ogden follow the FWA through the medium of their appearances on television. We have recently recorded and will soon release our second episode of that, covering episodes 5 through 8 of the Portsmouth TV run. You can go to linktr.ee/FWApod to find everything to do with that. Next week, he has once again hopped the garden gate and let himself in through the back door. Amy Bell returns, and we're going to be talking some Ring of Honor. Brian Danielson versus Kenta from Glory by Honor 5, Day 2. September 16th, 2006. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you then. Goodbye.